Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on the federal land banks right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. Well, Swinton, back in 1880, was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged everyone, all of his colleagues, by replying that there is no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of a journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks, and they pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, if you'd like more information about private business and our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Now, I began today's monologue with this introduction by John Swinton. John Swinton was a journalist. This is back in 1880, now 4 years before the protocols were first published in 1884. And he pointed something out about the press in 1880 in that statement that he made. Remember, that was to a group of his peers, fellow journalists. And, you know, somebody at the meeting, you know, they said, hey, let's have a toast to the independent press. Now, we believe here in America that our press is independent. We have three of them. We have ABC, CBS, and NBC. And NBC is chaired by, in their news department, by a guy named Brian Williams. Hell of a nice guy. Good looking. Forthright. All-American. I mean, this is the guy that you want living next door to. On CBS, we have a lady by the name of Katie Couric. God, she reminds me of a cheerleader. Good-looking woman. And she's just as honest and straightforward And just, you know, you just can't beat Katie. And then on the other network, ABC, they got a woman on there by the name of Diane Sawyer. Now, Sawyer has been on television for many, many years. And Diane Sawyer is confidence evoking. I mean, when you listen to her, you just believe what she has to say. Now, listen to this little story here. I want to tell you here about the press. This is the 12th protocol that says we shall handle the press in the following manner. Number one, we shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. We shall do the same also with other printed matter, for of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Number two, not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Number three, literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. Now, if we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 private journals of our own, and so on. Now, this must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. Boys and girls, you can sit here and talk about the press until hell freezes over. That's already been accomplished. And Americans believe that their press is free because there's three of them. It never occurs to people that, gee, could the same forces, could the same secret societies control all three networks and Fox? The president complains about Fox being opposed to him, the president. Well, then they must be pro-Republican. But what difference does it make if the secret societies control both political parties? And then when we deal with where do the news outlets get their information, well, they get it from Reuters, UPI, and Associated Press. Did you notice here in the protocol it says, we have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. UPS, Reuters, and AP. Now, you can sit here and say, well, I don't believe it. Well, but your belief doesn't change anything, and what I'm pointing out to you here is the facts. I mean, these guys have already done this. When you're watching 60 Minutes, you're not seeing 60 Minutes come in here and explain to you and reveal to you what the federal land banks are doing or what the Federal Reserve System is doing to you. You've never seen an expose on there that would explain or which would expose the powers behind the scenes. And that's because the powers behind the scenes control all of the editorial comments that come out of these papers. Now, in the past few years, we've seen a phenomenon in the Internet. In the Internet, you have, so far, now the day is coming when they're going to control that too, but so far, you have a whole host and plethora of people like me and Bob Chapman and others, you know, that can come on the Internet and say, well, here's what I think. Here, let me tell you the story. Let me tell you what I found out. Now, I see moves in Congress where Google and other big players in the game here, what they want to do is they want to control the input and the output from the Internet. One of these days we'll have to have a license in order to get on the Internet, and one of these days it won't be free. Now, there was a time when the press was free. And right now, the secret societies are having some real problems with the Internet. There's just too much information out there that you people can get hold of that's contrary to what they want you to believe and what they want you to know. And it's a phenomenon, but they're getting a handle on it, and they're getting control of it. And with their control of Congress and the executive branch and the Supreme Court and the news media and the educational system, the public schools and so on, as time progresses along, in fact, there's a prophecy that goes along this line. And I think the Internet is here just expressly for the purpose of God himself to get his message out. And then once he gets through with it, then there's coming a time when the truth, the knowledge of the truth, is going to be suppressed. Yep, it's going to be suppressed. Now, the Bible, the Ten Commandments, and prayer, and the knowledge of God has been suppressed and removed from the public schools. It has been suppressed and removed from the press. It's suppressed and it's been removed from government. And the day is coming when it will be suppressed and removed from the Internet. Now, the powers that be are going to take over the world, and they're going to succeed in their goal. They're going to drive all of you farmers off the land and into the cities. Before this is over, you will line up to get your mark of the beast so that you can get a card, or in this case, the mark will be a chip in your right hand and in your forehead so that you can get into the soup line, so you can get a job, so that you can function in society. Those that don't have this mark of the beast are going to be outlaws. They're going to be hunted like rabid dogs and killed. Well, if they can catch them, they're going to kill them. There will be some survivors. There will be some that get away. If you want to be one of those that gets away, you should start planning today. Don't wait until the ship hits the iceberg. Start planning today. What are you going to do when the mark of the beast comes? How are you going to deal with that? Now, the farmers of America, they're not all dead. There are some farmers in America that are free and clear. Now, remember, they're going to try to suck you guys into debt, if there's any way they can do it. I get offers all the time. They want to loan me money. If they see that you're free and clear, they want to loan you money. Now, so far, I've withstood them. I haven't borrowed anything. You know, I'm free and clear. And I've been teaching my students the same thing. Debt is your Achilles heel. First of all, dealing in Federal Reserve notes is your Achilles heel because they're unjust weights and balances. You want to deal in gold and silver. But even if you're dealing in gold and silver, you don't want to borrow anything. And that's because if your business is profitable, you don't need to borrow. But they're going to appeal to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear to see if they can't stimulate you to borrow. So if you can resist that, if you can control your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, you might be able to weather the storm. Now, the insurance companies and the commercial banks did not succumb to this temptation. These guys are professionals. The insurance companies never made the mistake of recklessly inflating the value of land. It's impossible to document a single case of an insurance company or private bank anywhere on the Great Plains of engaging in this kind of conduct. Yet the Federal Land Bank at Wichita, Kansas, pulled these shenanigans a dozen times a day at the height of the land boom in the late 1970s and early 1980s. These loan officers, or a loan officer at the bank, once said to me, he said, "You'll never live long enough to see wheat land go below $1,000 an acre." Nowadays, you can buy wheat land all over the Great Plains for less than $400 an acre, except for irrigated land, which is about $750. Now, the idea that land prices would never come down was just not true, but loan officers repeatedly used it as a talking point to convince farmers to plunge helplessly and hopelessly into debt. Now, I have documented the sale of a wheat farm in 1970 for $60,000. In 1980, that same farm sold for $240,000. That's three times as much. Now, in terms of price increases, the land boom of the 1970s was the largest in world history. The federal land banks bear sole responsibility for bringing it on, since the federal government was behind the boom and the resulting collapse. I think it's only fair for the federal government to help the farmers out of this disaster. Hey, disaster? Federal government's going to help you farmers out of it? All right, dream on here, boys and girls, if you think that's ever going to happen. On a more positive note, at least half of America's remaining farmers have never done business with the federal land bank. Hey, that's a positive note, and they never will. Now that they have seen what the federal land bank has done, they're all scared, and they ought to be. They may not understand what the scam was or how the scam worked, but they can see what happened to all these farmers in this land boom. And they had their loans with insurance companies or commercial banks, and they weren't involved in the federal land bank scheme. But hey, boys and girls, now they've got half of you guys out there, and they want to get the rest of you. And in order for them to do that, they're going to have to suck you into some other scheme, some other deal. So it may not be the same thing the next time. It may not be the federal land bank. But remember, they're going to be appealing to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Now, here comes your protecting savior. If you practice the Ten Commandment model, they will never be able to pierce your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. That's how simple this whole process is. When you practice the Ten Commandment model, you don't borrow money and you don't pay interest. That's how simple that is. When somebody says, hey, you should pay interest, you back up and you say, wait a minute, that violates the law of God. No, we're not going to do that. And when they say, hey, wouldn't you like to buy this land over here? No, it's against the law to buy and sell land. Well, wouldn't you like to do this, that, or something else? Well, measure it up to the Ten Commandment model, the statutes, judgments, and commandments. If it violates any of those statutes, judgments, or commandments. Now, when we talk about agriculture, we're talking about 15 agricultural laws. There are certain laws that are in force and effect here that God himself gave us. Now, remember, last week I gave you the 19 health laws. I said, hey, listen, here, listen to these health laws now. You practice these health laws, you won't get sick. Now, in the last and concluding program here, I'm going to give you those 15 agricultural laws. You practice those agricultural laws, those guys will never get into your pocket. Now, there's 16 economic laws that go along with this. If you could practice the economic laws and the agricultural laws, they'll never be able to take your land away from you. And that's because you're never going to violate the law of God. All right, going on here, then on a more positive note, at least half of America's remaining farmers have never done business with the federal land bank system, and they never will. Only about 30% of them use that system as their loan company, and they're the ones that are in trouble. And there's an old saying, what goes around comes around. Payments on these ludicrously high farm loans have come around, and of course farmers can't pay them. I attended a sale near Goltry, Oklahoma several years ago. An old Mennonite was sitting there taking in the scene. He'd obviously seen the snow of many, many winters, and after the sale I talked to him. He knew what the auctioneer's sidekick and the loan officer were up to. He'd been to too many sales and he'd seen many bids picked out of thin air. He summed it all up by saying, it makes one wonder who's trying to skin whom. It's an interesting point. Many farmers were greedy enough to participate in the scam, as I've heard it described 1,000 times. The loan officers were certainly greedy for larger fees and commissions, and therefore willing to throw caution to the stiff prairie breezes. The sidekicks worked for greedy auctioneers who received higher commissions on larger sales. This whole system stinks to high heaven and it screams for a solution. None has appeared. Washington has yet to penetrate the fraud, and Congress dutifully passes laws that make more money available to prop up the system, never stopping to ask what in the hell's going on here. Pause. Wait a minute. Congress is a part of the scam. The Federal Land Bank is a part of the scam. The Department of Agriculture is a part of the scam. These secret societies are a part of the scam. Nobody's going to blow the whistle on any other segment of government or the secret societies. They're in on the deal. They're the guys that are pulling the deal in order to benefit or profit from it. Now, if you own your land free and clear, you're in pretty good condition. If you can keep your land free and clear and keep producing, we got famine coming here, boys and girls. You farmers out there that survive this, you're going to make a killing here on this famine. How do I know famine's coming to the United States? Well, because Bible prophecy tells me that. You can take that one to the bank. If you think, boys and girls, that we Americans can give our God the finger for these past 80 years or so, violate all the laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices, for which he says the ultimate outcome is famine, and then you think you're going to pray to Jesus and he's going to make everything good, huh? Do you? Let me give you a little reminder here. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 17 and 18, I hear this all the time, pray for America. Pray for who? Pray for America. I hear people telling me that all the time. In verse 17, here's your creator. Here's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Pay attention here. Listen to the boss. He says, he's going to take the tenth of your sheep, and he'll take all of your servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you. And the Eternal will not hear you in that day. Well, here we are, boys and girls, and you're out here praying for relief from Barack Obama. Well, remember, this is the king that you set over you. Remember the last election? Hey, remember this Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid? Hey, remember these senators and representatives that just gave you this national health care insurance program? These are the people that you voted into office, remember? These are the kings that you set over you. And now since you've rejected your God in the process, he says, you can pray to me until hell freezes over and I will not hear you. So when students come into class here and they say, well, should we pray? I say, what for? What was it you were going to pray for? Well, we're going to pray for deliverance from Barack Obama. We're going to pray for deliverance from the National Health Care Program. We're going to pray for deliverance from the secret societies, you know. Excuse me? We're the people, remember, that went out and borrowed the money, paid interest in violation of the interest and usury law. We're the ones that went out and bought, sold, and traded the land in violation of Leviticus 25:23 that says the land shall not be sold forever. We're the ones that refused to practice the inheritance law, the landmark laws. Hey, come on, guys. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. We've done nothing but give our God the finger for the last 80 years, and now you expect he's going to come along and cut you in on the inheritance? Your Uncle Buster wouldn't do it, and I got news for you. Your God says he ain't going to do it either. Now, is there any salvation out of this? Is there any way for us to cut a fat hog in the back, maybe even save ourselves? Well, yeah, there is. Let me read this to you again. I did this the other day. It's in 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14. He says, if my people, which are called by my name, the Israelites, what is the name of God, Israel, shall humble themselves, you farmers out there, if you'll humble yourselves and pray and seek the face of your Creator now and turn from your wicked ways. Here's the key to this. If you guys will quit practicing usury and interest, if you'll quit practicing this practice of buying, selling, and trading land and making a product out of your inheritance, making a mockery of it. If you guys will start practicing the land Sabbaths and the Jubilees, if you'll practice these agricultural laws over here, you know your God says, in the last sentence, he says, then will I hear from heaven, and I'll forgive you your sin, and I'll heal your land. I'll take this Barack Obama and dispose of him. I'll take Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, just like I took Franklin D. Roosevelt, and I'll dispose of their sorry carcasses. But I'm not going to do that as long as you're giving me the finger. And I don't see that we as a nation are going to change that habit or that practice. Now, some individuals of us might. I mean, you know, Joe Sixpack Farmer over here, he might make a change, which could make a deal for him. I can make a change, and I can make a deal for me. But you and I are not going to change California. We're not going to change Arnold Schwarzenegger or Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi or the Federal Land Bank or the secret societies. Those people are wicked, they're evil, and they're going to continue on with their wickedness and their evil. Let them go their way. Concentrate on saving your own ass out of this. Congress changed the accounting rules of the system in 1987. And it was decided that the Federal Land Bank system only had to write off 5% of its losses in any one year. Say that the Federal Land Bank of Wichita lost $100,000 in 1 week. Then I assure you that in some weeks it's lost a great deal more than that. Once it lost $1.8 million in a single day. It writes off $5,000, though, as an operating expense. The rest of the loss is then held and written off in the succeeding 19 years, assuming farmers are stupid enough to deal with the system in the future. Future farmers will have to pay for all current and past losses because of joint and several liability. This amounts to a built-in sword of Damocles hanging over the necks of my farmer friends. Now, let's pause here for a second. Let's suppose your farm now is sitting here with a mortgage on it, and you've got it with the Federal Land Bank. You're dead on arrival here, partner. Even if you can make your payments, the rest of the guys that don't make their payments, you got to make their payments for them. The best thing you can do is get your loan paid off and get the hell out of that program. So if you can go get the money anyplace else so that you can get out from under joint and several liability. Now, if you're just in debt, you're dead. Because once this thing goes upside down, they're going to foreclose on you. So the best place to be is either in debt up to your eyebrows, where if they take it, they're not taking anything of any great value from you. The worst thing that can happen to you is you've got 3 payments left to go and they foreclose on you. You either want to be free and clear, or you want to be in debt up to your eyeballs, one or the other, but not with any equity. Going on, it says, as new farmers were using government money to tie up the economic resources of the Great Plains, namely the farmland, and to hold it outside the traditional channels of commerce in order to deprive their more cautious neighbors of more land. The government here could best serve all by not serving anyone. Is land valuable because of the misbehavior of some loan officers? Absolutely not. Land is valuable because of what you can do on it, what you can produce from it. Let's give you an example of this. At the north edge of Oklahoma City, there used to be some rough grassland, and it was owned by cattle farmers. This land was too poor to grow wheat. It wasn't worth over $300 an acre. And a businessman bought some of it for $400 an acre. Now, everyone who knew about this sale thought this was too high a price, and they told him so. And the businessman said, "No, I did not pay too much for this land. I will not graze cattle on it. I will build a huge shopping mall on it." And he executed his plan. He built a big shopping mall on that rough pasture land. Now, that land today is easily worth $1 million an acre today. So why is this difference between $400 an acre, $300 an acre, and $1 million an acre? It's the same land. Well, the difference is in what he did with the land. When Miss Mandy sold the land, she was selling wheat land. And that's what she and her late husband did with the land. They grew wheat on it. What will the new owner do with this farm? He will grow wheat. But he cannot justify the higher price that he paid for the land because he's not changing the use of the land. This point is never remembered at farm auctions when loan officers and sidekicks are manipulating the crowds. What we have here is a government agent, namely the loan officer of the Federal Land Bank, going out to the countryside and talking the farmer into an irrational, uneconomical, and unconscionable, stupid course of action. Let's forget the noise that occasionally emits from the plush halls of the Federal Land Banks that they are private. They are not private. For some time, I have mentioned this dispute on whether these banks are public or private, and I have never fully answered and have let the reader use his own imagination. Now it's time to answer this question. These banks are owned, operated, and financed by the U.S. government. The fact that they raise money, most of their money, from private sources is not material. The Panama Canal Company raises most of its money privately. So does the Tennessee Valley Authority. So do many of the merchant marine shipping companies, and so does the post office. But that does not make them private. The federal land banks are government agencies. The federal courts have this point of law before them repeatedly, and they have always ruled that the federal land bank system is an instrumentality of the U.S. government. And the Farm Credit Act of 1971 states that these banks are federal instrumentalities, and as such, they need not pay local or state taxes, except for land taxes on their buildings. They're exempt from local government taxes because they're part of the U.S. government. And yet the government lets their officers go out into the countryside and talk the farmers into an irrational course of action. Now, in all the history of the world, I know of only one other such instance. During the 1860s, when the U.S. was divided and fighting a civil war over the slave question, Russia was thrown into turmoil because the Tsar ordered freedom for the farmers. Now, the Tsar paid the landowners for their land and then sold the land to the peasants, taking long-term mortgages. The peasant had to pay for the land that he and his family worked for centuries. This did not seem fair. A group of people in the cities went out into the countryside and talked to the peasants about this, and they made continuous trips and spent years selling the peasants on the unfairness of it all. And this helped to undermine the confidence and the trust that the peasant had in his government. These people in Russia who did this helped set the stage for the revolution that came in 1917. Remember? The Communist Revolution. At such time, the communists took over. And these agitators are called Narodukes, pronounced Narodniks, Narodniks in the Soviet Union. That's what was done by the loan officers of the federal land banks. They went out into the countryside and they talked the farmers into bidding against each other, promised them huge loans, and in general encouraged them, some of our best farmers, to plunge helplessly into debt. Those are the American Narodniks. The loan officers of the insurance companies and the small commercial banks didn't participate in this tawdry practice. In fact, they abandoned the field. When I get to a review of certain counties in succeeding chapters, it'll be noted that insurance companies didn't compete for the farmers' business, but instead they let the federal government have the whole thing. In 1971, the Farm Credit Act was signed into law by President Nixon, and this is the year that the insurance companies quit loaning to farmers. From that point on, the federal land banks and the FMHA totally socialized the long-term farm credit. What's in the Farm Credit Act of 1971? Well, hang on here, boys and girls. Let me give you a mid-course reminder, and we'll come right back and we'll take a look at the 1971 Act. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download it right there, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults. And the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on the program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors, these publications that we're citing, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book. It's called Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. It's an expose of, among other things, there's more than one expose in here, but particularly Chapter 4 of the Federal Land Banks. It's put out by Acres USA. The telephone number to get a copy now is 1-800-355-5313. Once more, that's 1-800-355-5313. Now, while you're at it, be sure to subscribe to Acres USA. It's $27 a year. Let's see, what's $27 a year divided by 12 issues is 2¼ an issue. It's about 50 pages. No, it's about 100 pages in it. 79 pages. Comes out about 80 pages every month. How much is that a page? 225 divided by 80? Oh, it's about 3 cents a page. And it's jam-packed with all of the information that we need as organic farmers or as organic consumers. I don't care if you're living in downtown Philadelphia. Acres USA is important to you because it'll show you where to get organic produce. The farmers that produce it are the places that you get it. You want to be in contact. Here's in the back page here. Let me show you something. There's a section in here that deals with meetings of farmers and consumers, if I can find it here. Oh, come on. I might have to give it to you in the next program if I can't find it here. Anyway, every state in the union has ecological meetings. Here it is. ECHO meetings, page 8081. In places like Pennsylvania, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts, Indiana, Missouri, Wisconsin, Washington, Tennessee, Iowa, California, all of these meetings that are going on. For instance, here's California, July 17th, 2010, Organic Garden Tour, Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, Occidental, California. For more details, call or visit. You want to make contact with suppliers that produce organics or that produce for the products for the farm. Acres, USA, that's the place to get it. It's the clearinghouse for organic agriculture and organic consumption. You want organics, this is the place to go to find out. There's other sources, I don't deny it, but there's nothing that tops Acres. All right, now the federal land banks were allowed to make loans in towns and cities of less than 6,000 population. They could also loan to non-farmers. They were allowed to loan money to the fishing industry, which is the reason for the insolvency of the federal land bank in Seattle, Washington. The 1971 Act provided for the Fed to buy bonds and debts of the entire farm credit system. The United States Treasury was ordered to bail out the system when necessary. The Act provided that all loans should be over 5 years in duration, hence the system was kept out of the short-term farm credit system. This is also the definition of long-term credit in this book, as opposed to short-term of less than 5 years. Now, I don't like this definition because commercial banks limit short-term debts to not over 1 year. However, I'll use the definition of long-term of over 5 years as stated in the 1971 Act. The Act also stated that all appraisal standards shall be prescribed by the bank, not by traditional standards under state or other national laws or of the real estate industry. So they're a law to themselves. This is the way the system got the power to manipulate appraisals and to kite them upward. A public figure in South Dakota told me that the appraisal practice was the key to the corruption of the system in South Dakota. Most of the loans the system made were on farmland that was not remotely worth what the Federal Land Bank appraised it for. In Nebraska, an auctioneer told me that the Federal Land Bank worked appraisals higher than any economic justification could account for. In Oklahoma, a former employee of the Federal Land Bank stated that officials had so kited the appraisal that the bank would collapse if honest accounting and real estate standards were used. He quit the bank and took a lower-paying job so that he would be in an honest environment. The idea that honesty always pays is not true. Honesty did not pay here, but he felt much better about his lower wages. His wife had to take a job to help meet the family expenses. Hey, by the way, this is exactly what Alan Greenspan and the Federal Reserve did to create the housing bubble. Remember, these bubbles now are created, and this farmland bubble was created. Now, the Farm Credit Act also provided that any member of the system could get a loan for agricultural purposes and other credit needs of the applicant. Loans could now be made for rural housing, fishing gear, pool halls, bowling alleys, and even a whorehouse, a house of prostitution. You name it, they loaned on it. And I'll document cases in which lawyers and dentists got loans, not so that they could go into farming, but so that they could ride their investments in farmland into personal fortunes. Many borrowers were greedy. Many loans were made on farmland when that farmland could not gross enough to pay the interest, much less other operating expenses or any principal. These operatives were making loans without the slightest reference to how they were to be repaid. Hey, does that remind you of these liar loans that have just come to light? Hey, this is your government in action. This is your tax dollars at work. Now, the federal land banks threw money around like popcorn, and yet all of these loan officers were college graduates. college graduates. It's got names. They got letters after their names. It has been preached for 50 years that education is the key to solving these problems. This has not been proved to be true in this lending system. Now, I know of one case in which a lawyer got so many bad loans with the Federal Land Bank of Wichita that he cost that bank over $800,000 by himself. A dentist slammed the bank with $50,000 in losses. Another lawyer cost the bank $1 million in losses. These people had nothing to do with farming. But they each applied for a loan and got it because he would agree to buy stock in the Federal Land Bank on credit and thus become a member of the system. Recently, a Federal Land Bank Association in Oklahoma loaned over $1 million to a doctor on city property. This loan is now in foreclosure. This has nothing to do with farming, but it illustrates why the system is corrupt beyond redemption. And yet, this is the system that brought massive amounts of credit to the wheat farmers of the High Plains and bankrupted them. The Farm Credit Act was widely discussed in Congress between 1969 and 1971, the year that it was passed. One provision speeded up the process by having a local attorney do the legal work rather than sending the paperwork to the bank's attorney. These local attorneys all over the Great Plains were selected not because they were knowledgeable about farm problems or farm economies, but because they were ignorant of farm matters. Most of them knew absolutely nothing about the profitability of wheat or which end of a cow furnished the milk. They thought eggs originated in the supermarket. In one case, the local manager of the Federal Land Bank was asked why he selected a certain lawyer to represent the association since the attorney did not have a farm background and did not major in agricultural sciences. Well, the manager said the attorney was handpicked because he was stupid in farm matters, and he was a wimp and wimp enough to keep his mouth shut. Did you get that? Because the lawyer would take his money and shut his mouth. Is that what happened here in the meltdown of the housing market? Come on, guys, let's all wake up now. This association lost money hand over fist. One of the attorneys was asked in court to state how much cash the farmer used to buy the stock in the system. That attorney said, in effect, why get excited about that? A farmer never uses cash. He always uses credit from the bank to buy the stock. This is in direct violation of the Farm Act of 1961 and 1971. Yet, that attorney was retained because he would go along with such foul play. He wouldn't stop these sales of stock on credit, and he wouldn't face down any other illegal or bad practices in the system. One has to conclude, sadly, that the legal profession, as hired by the Federal Land Bank system, was for all practical purposes totally ineffective in the larger scheme of things. Or were they a part of the larger scheme of things? Have you ever stopped to think about the other side of it? Now, as soon as this law was on the books, the farm credit system in the USDA went to work to vastly expand credit to the farmers. Any loan officer in the FMHA and the Federal Land Bank systems who would not agree to make fast loans was encouraged to retire. And if the officer failed to comply, removal became the next step. Many of these loan officers who refused to go along with the system had criminal audits made of their management practices. That caused most of them to take the hint, and then they left. Many of these old managers were good managers. For example, in Alfalfa County, Oklahoma, during the previous 50 years, the Federal Land Bank never foreclosed on a single farmer. In 1985, that bank foreclosed 19 farmers on loans made after 1971. Older, competent loan officers were replaced by college graduates who held degrees chiefly in the field of agricultural economics. Most of these men were about 22 years of age. All of them were Republicans and from Republican families perceived to be ultra-conservative. A liberal Republican was not even considered for employment. all came from farms where their fathers believed that they could make more money if they had better lines of credit, or if they got bigger. And so these young men went along with the federal land banks in the effort to vastly expand credit to farmers and to increase farm size. The first thing that they did was to drive out all the competition in the long-term credit system. Insurance companies held about 35% of the long-term farm debt in 1971. And they soon found that their loans were being undermined, that vast amounts of credit from the federal land banks and FMHA was now in the system. This led to a high rate of defaults. As a consequence, insurance companies elected to stop loaning money to farmers altogether. This trend was set in motion when the Farm Credit Act of 1971 was being debated in Congress. One insurance vice president put it this way. He said, quote, "There's absolutely no way that you can safely loan more than about $60,000 per 160 acres to wheat farmers. If you loan more than that, the farmer can't make money because his interest is too high." So he defaults on the loan, and the insurance company has no good way to get the money back. So the insurance company sues, and this makes for bad public relations. And in that way, everybody loses. The U.S. government is now going to loan many hundreds of thousands of dollars to farmers on 160-acre farms, and all that they are going to have is a lot of financial losses. And we'll just sit back and let the government write off the losses during the next depression. And that's exactly what happened. Now, boys and girls, we're at that point in time. We're at the next Great Depression. Now, as this depression develops, let's take a look at the timeline here for a moment. When the stock market collapsed, which is really just a symptom of depression times coming, it occurred in October of 1929. It took 3.5 years to reach the bottom, which occurred in March, April, and May of 1933, right after President Roosevelt took office in March. One of the first things he did was to pull the gold out of the economic system with House Joint Resolution 192. Now let's take a look at the parallel. The stock market peaked here at 14,000, dropped to 6,500. That was a symptom of what was to come. The stock market is not the depression. See, we've all got our minds, we've all got our eyes on the stock market. That's not the problem. And that's just a barometer. That's like a thermometer. It tells us what the temperature is. And that doesn't tell us where the meat's spoiling. It just tells us that the temperature is so high that the meat is going to spoil. Now, in 1930, the stock market actually made a recovery. So if you'll notice, the stock market made a recovery. It dropped from 14,000 to 6,500 and jumped back up to 11,000. That's exactly what happened in 1930. But the problem wasn't solved by the stock market going back up. That's just a talisman. It just makes you feel good. Unemployment began to grow. Banks began to fail. And farmers began to fail, and unemployment increased. And that's exactly what you're seeing here now. The peak of it all occurred 3.5 years later, about March, April, and May of 1933. So it took all of 1930, 31, and 32 until the first quarter of 1933, or approximately 3.5 years. Now, this thing started in 2008, so we started into recession in 2007. The stock market didn't break until sometime later. So what we're taking a look at here, just follow this scenario out like it did in 1929 to 1933. And I'm guessing that sometime around the spring of 2012 is when we're going to hit the bottom. That's about 3.5 years from the beginning. Now, remember, this thing starts now right after the Olympics in 2008. It broke. in September. Paulson comes out and he says, hey, we got to have this stimulus plan. And so just to start counting, you know, September, October, 2008, just like September, October, toward the end of 1929. So if we go from October of 2008 to October of 2009, 2010, 2011, spring of 2012, will be 3.5 years. Now, why do I think we can follow 1929? Because I'm following these numbers right now. 1929 depression through the 1930s was a perfect success for government. Perfect success for the secret societies. They could never improve upon what they already accomplished in the 1930s. So why not do the same thing a second time? The last time was a perfect success. No sense changing the modus operandi today. Now, the Farm Credit Act of 1971 is absolutely the worst piece of farm legislation ever to pass the U.S. Congress if the Aiken bill that struck down parity is to be accepted. It financed a land boom unprecedented in the history of the world, and it failed the wheat farmers in every way. Okay. He says, this was an absolute worst piece of farm legislation ever passed. No, boys and girls, it was the greatest piece of farm legislation ever enacted. It accomplished all of the goals that the New World Order had in mind. It never was intended to help wheat farmers. It was intended to bury them and destroy them, and it succeeded. Its sponsor was Senator Henry Bellman. Never borrowed from the Federal Land Bank before 1971. In the first year the Farm Credit Act of 71 was in existence, he got 4 loans. In time, he came to have over $2 million in credit from the Federal Land Bank in Wichita. Some of these loan papers were signed in the halls of Congress itself. They were not signed in Oklahoma, where Bellman lived and where he bought additional land. Well, that's a part of the ruse. The guy that sponsors the bill, he goes out and he says, hey, let me buy into it. Hell, that sounds like President Ford. Remember when he was selling that swine flu vaccine, rolled up his arm and said, here, I'm going to take a shot. I doubt seriously that he took the serum. I think he took distilled water. But then, you and I don't know that, do we? Now, I tell you, boys and girls, this has been a hell of a ruse, and it has worked so well for the conspirators. For these wicked and evil men that are out to take your farm and destroy America and destroy you financially and economically, hey, this is a program that has succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. So I'm sitting here saying, well, don't you think it's time that you and I woke up, smelled the coffee, and started to take some kind of action to mitigate what's coming down on us? Remember, the name of the book again is called Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. The author's name, Raymond D. North. And we're looking for the source of the book, which is Acres USA, 1-800-355-5313. That's 1-800-355-5313. While you're at it, be sure you get a subscription to Acres USA, $27 a year, about 3 cents a page. 3 cents a page. This is the best source that I know of organic supplies, both for consumers and producers in the United States and probably worldwide. Hey, I'm out of time here, children. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is sponsored or heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.